This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Moving on then to our first story of the hour. There have been a lot of headlines surrounding the East Coast Rail Link. Is it on? Is it not? It's all a bit of a roller coaster ride at the moment.
So it came back into the spotlight over the weekend after a series of miscommunications. Economic Affairs Minister Dato' Sri Azmin Ali said the contract with the project's main contractor, China Communications Construction Company, or CCCC, had been cancelled. He said the country could not afford the 500 million annual interest on the project. Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng, on the other hand, said that there wasn't an official decision yet.
And then, of course, Prime Minister Dr. Mahathir Mohamad kind of waded in, saying that the project isn't cancelled yet. Negotiations were still ongoing, but also that our country will be, and I'm just going to use the word he used, impoverished if we go ahead with the project.
So MCA President Dato' Sri Wee Ka Siong wrote an open letter and urged the government not to cancel the project. In the letter, he talked about some of the potential loss and damage we could face if we cancelled the project, like how it could potentially harm our diplomatic ties with China and our reputation internationally. He added that it could lead to a loss of jobs as well.
Right now, almost 20% of phase one of the project is completed. If we choose to terminate, we're going to have to pay somewhere in the region of 22 billion ringgit in compensation and penalty charges. So it looks a little bit, at least from the outside, like a lose-lose, or like it's just a question of what is going to be the severity of that loss, you know? But we felt that we needed more information to kind of really get to grips with this, because it's just there's so much going on. So we'll be speaking with Lawrence Todd of Ideas after this. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bring forth Moolah, BFM 89.9.
It's the Evening Edition with Lynn and Calvin. We are trying to get a handle, get to grips with all that's going on with the ECRL project. We're going to cross over now to Lawrence Todd, the Director of Research and Development at Ideas. Lawrence, thanks for joining us. In your opinion, would it make economic sense to axe the ECRL?
From an economic perspective, there's really three considerations, I would say. In the first instance, there's the short-term economic impact, which is the direct activity that's generated as a result of the project. So the construction companies, the subcontractors, all of those companies in the supply chain and the jobs that are created as a result of the project. The second issue is then the long-term economic impact. So it, does that infrastructure improve the underlying fundamentals of the economy of that area? Like, do they create new opportunities for businesses over the next 20, 30 years? And then the third issue is the financial sustainability. So is the infrastructure development financed in a way that's affordable over the long term? And then crucially, the second and third issues are obviously very closely related. If actually the infrastructure investment does not lead to longer growth, you know, lead to greater growth in the long term, then it's not going to generate the tax revenues in this case that would allow the government to be in a position to pay back the loan that has financed the development. I think the problem we've had with the ECRL is that we've talked a lot about the first issue, you know, how many Malaysian companies are engaged in the construction. And I think there's arguments on both sides. On the one hand, you know, I think there's clear evidence that most of the major contractors are actually Chinese contractors. And that's to some extent happening because the skills don't exist in the local economy, but there might be other factors too. But at the same time, there are definitely companies, Malaysian companies, that stand to benefit from this level of economic activity. And we've also focused a lot on the third issue, you know, the financing, how much it all costs. I think the tricky thing is we're still not clear on the second issue. What is the underlying long-term value of this infrastructure? And I think it's quite difficult to say, like, to be honest, for me looking at it as an observer, I don't see an obvious strong rationale. And I think that if the government was to move ahead, I think it would need to strengthen that rationale. So like publish a detailed impact assessment on the long-term growth impact of this infrastructure.
Are there any clear long-term benefits of going ahead with the ECRL then?
Well, in terms of clear reasons to go ahead, I think that definitely in terms, it would provide a short-term economic stimulus, the construction activity, and that would have a positive impact in the supply chain locally. So that's positive. I also think it would be, you know, in some quarters, it would be taken positively internationally. You know, it would be seen as Malaysia kind of moving forward on this issue and still being open to foreign investment, but that might improve, you know, the sentiment in the capital markets and other, among other foreign investors. As I said earlier, I think, you know, the question of whether the ECRL is the valuable investment for the long-term growth of the Malaysian economy, I think is less definitive. And I think that there are other investments that would be more valuable than the ECRL.
So as we mentioned earlier, there's been a little bit of a back and forth on this. Nobody seems to know what the decision's going to be. Why has it been drawn out for this long?
It is complicated. I think that it's fair to say that, you know, the government did need to take some time in order to understand, as I said at the beginning, you know, the kind of balance of the short-term, long-term financial considerations. I have to say, though, that I think there's something else, which is I think we do see a tendency from this government to move quite slowly on these issues. I think that's partly a necessary feature of a coalition government, but I think it's also a sort of instinct that the government sometimes waits to see the lay of the land before committing to a final decision, waits to see how the politics plays out. But as I say, I think it is a genuinely complex issue, and so I think it's reasonable for some time to be taken. I think the other issue is that there's a lot of high-profile political concerns with these projects. There's all the economic concerns we've been talking about so far, and then, of course, there are also the concerns around corruption and how this is linked to, for example, the 1MDB scandal. And I think that for the government, it's been quite difficult to identify, okay, if we were to restart these projects, on what terms can we do that? How do we avoid these risks of bad governance? And how do we address these economic concerns? And those are not simple questions. So I do think, to some extent, it justified that it's taking this long to make a decision.
What do you make of Tun M's strategy and public position on this?
Well, I think it's characteristic of a man leading a coalition on a complex issue. he has to be quite careful. China's a kind of crucial partner. But there was a very, very clear position taken in the run-up to the election. And so I think it was right that the government under the Prime Minister's leadership moved so quickly to pause or terminate and then thoroughly review the project. So I think that's to his credit. I feel like now we're at a stage where what's not so good is that we're seeing these individual statements coming out from individual ministers. We're not getting a clear overall statement from the government. I think that after the initial furor of the election and the campaign and then the cancellations and pausing we saw in the summer, what we needed then, say in the autumn and now, was like maybe a public consultation or a published report from the government that was going to detail the financial and economic implications so that they could try and build a consensus, whereas it still feels like it's a decision behind closed doors, and even then it's not a decision that's being taken quickly or that everyone's aware of, and it feels like we're getting individual messages from different ministers. So I think that is not so great in terms of the strategy from the Prime Minister.
Right. And one of the conflicting messages coming out about the cancellation had to do with not being able to afford the interest on the loan, which is about 500 million ringgit per annum. On the other hand, the reported compensation or penalty, rather, for cancelling the project might be something in the region of 22 billion ringgit. How will that impact our economy?
22 billion ringgit is, of course, a significant sum. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the specifics of the contract, which are quite difficult to access. So I don't know how accurate that figure is. Look, I think it really comes down to what the Prime Minister said, which is that, yes, 22 billion is a big number, but it's a smaller number than, you know, having to pay back 55 billion with interest. And I think that's the risk. And I think what we sense from the Cabinet is that they're not convinced that the underlying economic rationale is strong enough that this investment would generate the revenue that would allow them to pay back the loan. And I think, from my perspective, I think that's a reasonable conclusion to take.
What sort of bearing would a cancellation have on our diplomatic ties with China? Do you agree with Wee Ka-siong, who said that the fallout would be bad?
When it comes to the relationship with China, we really have to zoom out and look at the big picture. As everyone will know, this is not something that's just happening in Malaysia. There's been a backlash, you could say, against the infrastructure financing that is kind of loosely termed the Belt and Road Initiative across Southeast Asia and Pakistan and Sri Lanka and elsewhere. And I think what's really happening now in Beijing is a bit of a rethink. It's a bit like, you know, some mistakes were made. And I think they were mistakes. And I think they were they were the result of a system that wasn't that well planned, and you had a lot of the big Chinese state-owned enterprises individually looking to engage in as many projects as possible and maybe not looking too carefully at the fine print and not thinking too closely about governance. And as a result, we've had some kind of bad contracts and some bad actors that have abused those contracts. And that's what's partly led to the backlash. So I think there's a process now happening in Beijing, which is, okay, how do we take this forward? And there's been interesting comments coming out of the Chinese government around better social responsibility of their overseas investments, better governance, and I think that's to be expected. So this is all happening in a much wider context about China's strategy, you know, in the region. And so I don't particularly see that. I mean, of course, further cancellation is not going to be taken well by China, but I think in some sense, it's already accepted that this whole process hasn't gone well. I think if Malaysia were to proceed, I think that would be a big upside for China in terms of the relationship, because I think it's reasonably priced in now that Malaysia is not going to proceed. So I would see the balance is more on the upside for the relationship.
So, Lawrence, I guess we can't, you know, let you go without asking you this question. Is there a diplomatic way or a best-case scenario when it comes to ending a contract of this magnitude?
Well, I suppose another way of saying that is a contract of this size can only be ended with diplomatic consequences, you know? So there's no way that the conclusion of this saga won't have a significant implication. I think there's broadly two scenarios. Scenario one is that the Malaysian government and the Chinese government find some way to proceed with this agreement, and that is done on terms which are palatable to the Malaysian government. And that means addressing the issue of, you know, local engagement. It means addressing the financing, and it means the Malaysian government being confident on the long-term economic viability of this project. I think that would be the best case, actually, but I think there's still further to go to get there. The other scenario is that the deal is fully cancelled. The government incurs debt. And this question about what is the way forward for Chinese investment in Malaysia, but also in the region, remains open. It's not settled. We still don't know what good Chinese investment looked like. We've seen bad Chinese investment, like overcosted, linked with corruption locally. And we know we don't want that. The question is, what is it going to look like when it works? And I think that would be the big positive outcome from concluding a deal in this case. I think it's a balanced and difficult issue. As I said at the end there, I think the best long-term outcome is that we can reach some deal to continue with the ECRL, but I think that has to be on the basis of good governance, a clear long-term economic case, and sustainable financing. And if that can't be achieved, it would be better to cancel the deal.
Lawrence, thank you so much for your input and for helping us kind of navigate the space. That was Lawrence Todd, the Director of Research and Development at IDEAS. If you've got any thoughts on the cancellation of the ECRL, you know, it's been a long-running thing. Is it happening? Is it not? What the fallout might be? We've kind of covered that, but we'd love to hear from you as well. What do you think? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 and let us know. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we're going to be headed to the news very shortly, right after this track by Deep Purple, Lady Luck, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.